From the land of the Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 24th day of April, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. And we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois. We'll catch up with him, I think, while he's still out on the tractor this afternoon planting corn. As we finish out our program today, we'll find out whether you'll be able to continue planting corn. The answer is no, is my guess, so fairly shortly today. In parts of the Midwest, when we discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Oh, and we'll hear another backyard industry from Lisa Brault today as the worm turns right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
In Chicago for this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day higher in the wheat pit. Nearby May contract at $6.89, up 12.5 cents today. July at $6.96.5, up 13.75. And September wheat at $7.05.5, up 13.75. The hard red July at $7.65.5, up 15 cents on the day. May corn futures at $5.01.25, a settlement price down 2.25. July at $5.07.25, 2.25 lower. And September corn at $5.05.25 lower there, and December futures at 5.02¾. That's down 1¢. March contract at 5.10¾, 1¾ cents lower. May of next year down 2 at 5.16¾. May beans at 14.72, up 3.5 cents on the day. July at $14.70 a bushel, up 5.25. August beans 9 higher at $14.09½, and September $12.90¼, up 4¾. November $12.31, 3.5 higher for the new crop. January $12.36¾, up 3¾. Bean meal at $4.80.20, that's 2¢ higher. Bean oil at $42.59, up 9 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the April at $144.25, 32.5 cents higher. June at $135.85, up 75. May feeders at $179.60, 97.5 cents higher. The August at $184.25, that's up $1.60. Lean hogs finished down $1.07.5 at $122.90 in the lead option May, June at $125.55, 70 cents lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, June contract, $101.87 a barrel, 43 cents higher. The RBOB gasoline at $3.08¢, that's a half of a cent lower for the afternoon. And ethanol futures at $2.21¢, up 5 and a rather down 5¢. The spread between the two is 87¢ wide. And that's a nickel wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at $4.70¢ on the trade, down $2, or rather down 2¢. And diesel fuel for the day at $3.03, up 3¢. Gold futures trading $1,290.30 an ounce, $6.10 higher in the U.S. dollar at 79.79. That's down 0.06 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the Urbana-Champaign area as in the National Weather Service. Mostly cloudy and a 72-degree high. It'll be breezy this afternoon on a south-southeast wind at 22 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 31. By the time we get to this evening, should be a few showers, some thunderstorms around. Those will come before 1 a.m. And then showers will be likely, a low of 48. South-southeast winds at 13 to 17 miles an hour in the area. They'll turn to the northwest after midnight. Winds will gust all the way to 24. Chance of rainfall this evening set at 90%. A 30% chance of rainfall and showers before 7 a.m. tomorrow. Then mostly sunny skies, a high of 71 degrees. It'll be breezy with a northwest wind at 16 to 20 miles an hour, gusting to 28. And Friday, partly cloudy and 47. Saturday, sunny and 71. Saturday night, a chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy and 47. On Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, cloudy and 70. Sunday night, showers and 53. Monday, showers and 66. Showers on Monday night and 49. Tuesday, showers and 59. Tuesday evening, showers continue and 40 degrees. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is Thursday, the 24th day of April. On the phone line with us to take a look at the futures markets is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How's the weather there in Mandeville, Louisiana today?
It's full. We're 80-something, and the humidity hasn't started cranking up yet, so it's a real pleasant day down here today.
Well, enjoy it, because all I can say is hopefully you'll get hot and humid and we can make fun of you later, because you have better weather than we do most of the time.
It will. It's coming. But we got to maybe wait another month or two, and then it'll start coming.
Well, there it is. So eventually the weather does change, and here in the Midwest the weather's going to change. And it's going to get wet. It'll drive folks out of the field for a while, but I don't know whether that was really playing very much in the marketplace today. What happened there? Is it driven by something else, maybe the wheat market in particular?
Well, wheat was the star commodity today, being up sharply higher. The driving forces in that probably is a combination of the Ukraine situation, a combination of less than desirable precipitation amounts being forecast for the southern plains. And then we have some colder air that could come on down into the southern plains and maybe give wheat another shot at some frost and freezing type temperatures. So I think it was a combination of that basically sent wheat futures sharply higher. The Ukraine situation, Soviet Union or former Soviet Union, Russia, whatever you want to call it, that probably looks to me like that might be a hot burner for quite some time, depending upon how you're reading the political side of the equation. But that's going to be, I think, kind of a bullish influence to the wheat market for some time in here.
I watched your midday YouTube from CGB. Those who, I think they can just probably search your name in YouTube and find those. They're there most every day. I think you do maybe a couple of them during the day, if I remember correctly. And you were talking a little bit about the corn in this case after you discussed the wheat and what was moving that marketplace and some of the upside potentials in the near term. And things that weren't in the offing, at least in the longer term at this point, something in that 570 area. But people are beginning to feel, I don't know whether they're feeling more a little better about the marketplace. We've had a pretty good rally in the corn to this point, and sometimes it's got to stop, I suppose.
Well, we've had a good rally, but all of the bearish talk from everybody has got the farmer scared that he sells it. So he sells into these rallies, and that was one of the reasons why we were up earlier in the overnight session and the early going, and then that farmer selling started to come into the marketplace as the rain started chasing people out of the field. So that's kind of what sent corn back down a couple cents here after a pretty strong two-day advance. I mean, I think the decline that we had off of the crop report and then Monday morning when we were teeter-tottering with breaking that trend line that had been in place, basically coming out of our January lows, again, that had everybody spooked just reading the wire commentary that that comes across my screen. You could tell everybody was about ready to panic on Monday. And I think that rally on Tuesday, and then the strong bubble up again there on Wednesday, and then we followed through a little bit overnight, did encourage farmers to peel off some old crop inventory. I even think they peeled off a little new crop inventory. So that's kind of what kind of got into the corn market. There's no doubt, being a technician, you view today's action, since it was higher and it closed lower, as probably a little minor hook reversal to the downside. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. Basically, every reversal that we've had on this corn market to the downside since we started the uptrend has been taken out, and I guess I'm still in the opinion that, of course, I'm sitting down here in New Orleans and looking at the trend lines, and they all point toward New York. So I still think this market's going higher. I think initially here, some of this wet weather, planting delay concerns, I'm not too sure we're having anything significant, at least at this point. But the idea that the market is not going in real early, and it does look like we may be running behind the average pace, I think that's starting to shave some of this optimistic yield projections that a lot of people have been using on the balance sheets. We're not going to talk about acreage switching if we get that far down the road until you probably get into middle May. Then if planting is running way behind like it did last year, then you begin to maybe talk about some acreage switching. But for the most part, I think the corn market needs to rally to actually sway maybe some of these bean acres back into the corn mix. So I still want to be bullish corn. I'm still looking at this 525, 530 as at least for the short-term objective. I think longer term there's room to go higher. I see a beautiful looking cup and handle formation on the weekly chart that would send the market at levels that people would think I'm nuts at this point, so I'm not going to talk about it.
Was that the 570 you mentioned earlier today?
No, actually, it had a six something on it.
Okay, well, let's not talk about that yet.
You know, but I love to be a contrarian, and I guess I don't know how many people are talking about $6 corn, but I guess I'm going to be the first one out of the chute. But remember, I'm not an advisor anymore. I'm just an old ex-market advisor that likes to visualize big things. So I'm visualizing a big thing for the corn market this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, there would have to be something that would happen. I don't know what that might be, but I suppose.
Well, my weather guy tells me we're going to have a late May, early June frost in the northern half of the Corn Belt. So if he's right, that'll make it go.
An early June frost would definitely make her go. Have we ever had such a thing? That would be.
Gosh, well, damn. We've had some late May close calls. There's been some real close calls, some cold weather coming down in the May 20th, May 23rd area.
Yeah.
So the way this year is going and the way the weather pattern has been so highly variable over the past 5 years or 7 years, I think anything's in play at this point.
Quick word on soybeans before I let you go.
Soybeans, everybody's nervous about the China situation and the overbought situation they have gotten themselves in and trying to wash out of inventory and maybe moving it into the United States. So that's the big key thing there. But as bearish as everything was, beans were able to actually pull out a higher close here today. And I don't think the bean market's done yet either. Export sales, we only sold 800 tons, I guess. But the key there is that we need to see upwards of 55 to 60 million bushel cancellations, and we haven't seen any cancellations. So while they're talking about South American beans coming into the U.S., that it's just mostly talk, and it's been relatively a small amount at this point in time. So the bean thing ain't done yet either until we start seeing some massive cancellations.
So the squeeze will have to be on eventually, I guess.
Well, at some point in time, beans could be very explosive. I got some big numbers in beans. Again, I'm going to reserve those numbers.
That's probably got a two handle in front of it. I don't even want to hear that.
But like I said, with the default mode bearish and everybody wanting to sell this and sell that, that's never going to go any higher anymore. I guess I like to tick people off by talking about the big numbers, because I tell you, nothing gets people more mad is when they're carrying a short position and you talk bullish talk to them. They just get mad as hell on
you on that one. You do that for fun. Hey, I'm going to let you go. You have a good afternoon.
Okay, Todd. Hey,
thanks.
Take care. Yeah,
that is Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Coming up next, Lisa Braltz visits the Sustainable Student Farm at the University of Illinois, where a very wormy experiment is underway in this edition of Backyard Industry.
It's spring, and gardeners everywhere are going out back and furtively checking their bins or piles for signs of decomposition. Composting, the act of using broken down fruit, vegetable, and yard waste to help Mother Nature create a fantastic amendment for the soil, is a gardening rite of passage. There are several passionate schools of thought on the subject. You can take classes on composting technique, and many, many books have been written about composting, including classic titles like Let It Rot. Then there's my favorite, Worms Eat My Garbage, which is all about vermicomposting or composting with worms. Oh, worms, I'm quite enamored of and blown away by the work they do in my compost pile, eating the food and leaves and grass clippings and turning all of it into worm castings. You know, worm manure, worm poop. Most compost piles are small operations meant for small gardens. But what happens on a large scale when enough compost has to be made to amend large garden plots or to provide enough organic material for thousands of seedlings?
So what we're standing next to right now is what they call an in-vessel continuous flow vermicomposting bin. We bought it from a company. This is one unit of what could be a much larger scale, like industrial vermicomposting system. This is what they would look like. And the idea is that we're going to start collecting food waste from the dining halls. Right now we got free leaf bedding, brown waste material from the city of Urbana, but I think we're going to try to start getting it from grounds and having them dump it here. So it'll be a mixture of leaf waste and produce, vegetable waste, and that combination, the carbon to nitrogen ratio and what worms like, that's kind of like the best combination. With the idea that we're going to create worm compostings from this, and we're going to use it for transplants and in our high tunnels.
It's a very special day for Zach Grant, the manager of the Sustainable Student Farm at the University of Illinois. He's about to become the proud parent of, well, a lot of worms who are going to eat some garbage.
So what we're looking at in here is 6 inches of leaf material. We're getting 80,000 red wigglers, which is about 80 to 100 pounds of worms. And we'll distribute that on top of this bed that you're looking at. And then we'll put a little bit, like another inch of leaves on top of that, and then food waste on top of that, then another 2 inches of leaves on top of that to make a 10-inch bed. And that's going to be the starting process.
He and his assistant, Matt Torino, are preparing the huge composter for the worms' arrival. It's about the size of two cars end to end. The composter is part of a vermicomposting pilot project in a new greenhouse at the farm that's happening thanks to grants from the Student Sustainability Commission and Ernst & Young. One of the project's aims? To see if composting food waste from university dining halls, food that often comes from the Sustainable Student Farm, is a worthwhile project. The farm has never composted any of its waste, so this is uncharted but exciting territory. The worms have arrived. Even though it's a cool and cloudy day, the climate inside the greenhouse is perfect for them. Fortunately, they're none the worse for wear from their trip.
So you can see they're a much smaller worm than a regular earthworm. The red wigglers have, oh yeah, I mean, look at that. They're just all over. So they're packed in this dry peat moss right here. I don't know how gentle we have to be with them.
Zach has to go teach a class, so he instructs Matt in the finer points of worm distribution before he heads out.
Okay, and then fairly quickly, let's try to get, you know, another inch, another one or two wheelbarrows to cover that.
Before Matt's even done, most of the worms have gotten straight to work. It's expected the first batch of worm castings will be ready for distribution on the farm in about 4 to 5 months.
So yeah, the worms will do all the work. They're magic.
For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Our thanks to Lisa Braltz, of course, for her backyard industry segments. Those are produced by your Director of Agricultural Programming here at Illinois Public Media, David Dickey.
Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana. For the spring season, Common Ground has gardening supplies and hundreds of varieties of organic and heirloom seeds ready for planting. Common Ground is a full-service grocery store that supports local farms year-round. More information is at commonground.coop. And from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more, slow-cooked over a wood-fired smoker. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m., and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana.
Now let's check now the cash grain market on the phone line with us is Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Matt, probably, I think, maybe. Are you on the tractor this afternoon, Matt?
Yes, I am.
And how close are you to being done planting corn?
Oh, within a couple of hours, I guess. Talking with a couple guys earlier, and I suppose if the weather cooperated, you know, we could switch a few acres to corn that we're going to go to beans, but a lot of that's going to depend on what this weather's like in the next 7 days.
No, I know because of our conversation just before we went on the air that you were listening to Dan, and Dan wants to be a contrarian. I suppose you are not. you've got corn in the ground at this point, right?
Yeah, and I guess what I was thinking of, Todd, is I'm taught to respect my elders, so I hate to say too much about what Dan had to say, but you know, in my opinion, for a hedger, or, you know, a guy that's got corn in the ground and a guy that's growing corn and beans, he needs to really think hard about, you know, what he was looking at maybe 10 weeks ago, and a lot of us were scared to death about not having much profitability, and I'm definitely willing to lock in profit at these levels. And then if a guy's bullish, there's a lot of cheap ways you can re-own some of those bushels.
I think that's probably, and I don't think Dan would disagree with you on that, although I was a little surprised because usually most people will say on the way up, do the scale up, selling, and then if you want to replace, replace later. And I was a little surprised that he didn't say that, but he didn't. So what do you think about this marketplace just in general when you look at it? You want to make some sales here for new crop. How far and how deep do you want to be in that process?
Well, I think a guy ought to have profits locked in, up to 50% or so. And I do like the idea of getting to at least 50% sold and, you know, covering some of those bushels with long calls if the guy wants to. But if he doesn't, he's still in a really good situation, especially if those are insured bushels. I'm not terribly worried about him having too much sold, especially having a little bit of upside there. So I'm definitely looking at 50 on corn and at least 50 on beans.
Now, that was my next question, is where you were on beans and 50 along on beans, too. Are you not so worried about how far along we'll be next Monday when the crop progress report comes out? What do you think that thing will show?
Well, I think we're going to be in the 25% plus range. I think it's going to be an impressive number. I know there's a lot of areas in the Midwest where guys aren't rolling. I know there's also areas where guys are getting done, and so it's going to be a very interesting array of different scenarios, but I think we're going to be a lot farther along than maybe what some people are thinking as far as corn goes here.
You're on the tractor. Do you have your bids for the day from the elevator?
Yeah, I do. Cash corn will be 485, fall 473, cash bean 1473, and fall 12 bucks.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, back in just 2 minutes.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's St. George's Day, patron of farmers. George was born to a Christian family during the late 3rd century. Eventually, he was martyred after refusing to participate in the persecution of Christians across the Roman Empire. George was sainted in 496. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, Granville T. Woods was born. Among Woods' inventions was an electric incubator for hatching chickens. In 1981, artificial skin was first transplanted in the U.S. on patients at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. The combination of cowhide, shark cartilage, and plastic was developed by a research team at MIT. This material makes possible the treatment of burn patients whose injuries might otherwise be fatal. In 1985, Coca-Cola announced it was changing its 99-year-old secret formula. New Coke, though, was a big flop. In 1992, the first McDonald's in Beijing, China, opened. It is the world's largest McDonald's with 28,000 square feet, seating for 701,000 employees. And in 1993, Cesar Chavez died. He was the founder of the United Farm Workers Union. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon, and Mike Tenora joins us from T-Storm Weather. He's based in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us. As I look around on the weather forecast, I see that next week's not going to be all that pretty, and even today's not all that great. What can you tell me about these rain systems that will be making their way across our part of the world?
You're right. We do have a few different problems that are developing for planting across the Midwest. The first one is ongoing now. We do have some rain out there, and that will swing on through the Corn Belt over the next 12 to, say, 24 hours. But it should be drying out by this time tomorrow morning across most of the Midwest. Now, on the plus side, it does turn breezy and warm as we go through the weekend, so we will start to see better conditions for areas that don't receive a lot of rainfall over the next couple of days. But the larger point to make is what happens after that. Beginning Saturday and Sunday, we do have a very large system that breaks off from the jet stream and then stalls somewhere in the Rocky Mountains. Eventually, it will make its way further to the east as it wobbles through the Plains, Corn Belt, and eventually into the eastern U.S. That all begins this weekend and continues all the way through next week. This is a pattern that we like to call the bowling ball pattern, because if you look at a map of the United States and lay the weather on top of it, you'll see a gigantic circulation that will be centered right in the middle of the country and essentially drifting on to the east. Ahead of this system, it does warm up, as we noted, but it also leads to heavy rainfall as it pulls tropical air to the north and interacts with the system. So we're looking for widespread rainfall of 1 to 3 inches across a big part of the Corn Belt and into the northern plains and even further south into the Delta. So that's a lot of rain, and that's enough to keep people out of the fields from planting for a large portion of next week. Now, it will be warm as it rains, but the other issue is that once the system passes, it turns unseasonably cool for most of the second half of next week, say beginning Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, and then lasting for about 5 days after that. Highs should only be in the 50s and 60s, with lows in the 30s and 40s, though rain chances gradually diminish as next week progresses. Still, even that said, we'll still see scattered showers around the region from Wednesday through Friday next week. The only way this isn't going to happen is if this storm system somehow ends up moving much further to the north or south than is currently expected, or if it were to move a lot more quickly. But at this point, it looks like a slow-moving system, the likes of which we haven't seen for quite a few years. These systems are, I wouldn't say rare, but not just the size of it and the speed of it. Usually they aren't this big, and usually they're not this slow.
So it is a system that is just going to grind a halt planting in the Midwest at a hole? Everything will stop?
Well, it's a lot easier to forecast the weather than to forecast how people will react to it and plant. But the only thing we have confidence in is fairly widespread rainfall of 1 to 3 inches within about Sunday to Tuesday coming up. After that, rain chances do diminish. We'll still see a few showers around for the latter portion of next week as temperatures turn cool. But it does dry out after we get through the big rain event over the first half of the next week. So, you know, the planting outlook, it doesn't look as good as it once did. But on the other hand, it does only last for 3 to 6 days, let's say.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time with us. I do appreciate it. Mike Tenora, of course, is with T-Storm Weather. He's in Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.